Welcome to On Tap with Corey and Ira, where they discuss Southern Minnesota breweries and beer. Here's your hosts, Corey Butler and Ira Carlson.
Today's episode is supported by Imminent Brewing in downtown Northfield. Good news, beer lovers. Honey Basil Ale is back on tap for this year, and it'll be on tap through September. Also joining the lineup will be the Little R&R returning just in time for Defeat of Jesse James Days, the first weekend after Labor Day. Also that weekend, Music Saturday at Armory Square. Check out imminentbrewing.com for all the latest beers and all the upcoming events. Hello and welcome to On Tap with Corey and Ira, your bi-weekly exploration of Southern Minnesota breweries and beer. I am Corey Butler.
And I'm Ira Carlson.
And we're back with another fun-filled episode. Ira, why don't you tell the fine folks listening at home what's on tap today?
No, we got a great show coming up. We had a chance to sit down with Caleb Fenske, the owner and, of course, head brewer of La Sanity Brewing down in Medelia, Minnesota, just a little ways outside of Mankato, about 20, 30-minute drive from there. So not on most people's radar, but easy enough to get to if you want to. I had a chance to stop in there in April, so we get a chance to chat with him, see if, what all he's been up to, and catch up with him. And then, of course, we've got Andrew in with a style of the week and a couple of interesting beers coming to us today for from Firehouse for our beers of the week. So very interesting show coming up.
I would say it's a beer packed show.
Oh yeah. Very much so. Very much so.
So we had La Sanity on. We've got two beers for beers of the week. And then we have six samples here from Waconia Brewing Company. So very,
it's probably good since we are a beer focused show that we have lots of beer to talk about.
Yes. They're very generous with sending some samples to us. Obviously the first time they'll be spotlight in the show, so we appreciate them giving us a wide array of beer that they offer. And I'll tell you, before we even dip into the beer, I mean, I have some experience with Waconia beer, Waconia Brewing beer, drinking their beer. I've been to their tap room a couple of times. I picked up some of their beer and taken it home. I've always enjoyed it, but there's a lot of options out there, so you don't always get to some beer as often as you'd like, because honestly, outside of the show, I don't drink that much. I don't enjoy beer as much as some people might think. And when I do go enjoy beer, I like to do it in the taproom space.
Yep.
I don't necessarily go to bars that often. I actually don't buy that much beer to bring home that much anymore. We get some beer through the show, of course, that we talk about. And then I try to hit taprooms when I'm in the area, and that's kind of it. And Waconia, it's not like it's hours and hours away, but you know, it's a good hour drive from where we are in Northfield. It's not that far outside of the cities, though. So I haven't been there lately, and I haven't had their beer. But having the six beers here in front of us and kind of tasting a little bit of each, I got to tell you, they've really nailed what they're doing there. It's from recipe to recipe, style to style, and we'll get into it here in a minute. I think they've done a really nice job of building up a good repertoire of beer from the lager side to the ale side to deeper chocolate flavors to the hop flavors. I mean, they've got just a really nice lineup. I don't know, should I just run down the beer they have?
Might as well. We've been trying all six of them here, so.
Yeah, so, you know, we're trying to clean our palate and have a fresh take at every beer, and we're just having a little bit from each of them. So here's a look at what they sent us. They gave us the Carver County Kolsch, the 255 Amber Ale, the Wacktown Wheat, the 90K IPA, their Peanut Butter and Chocolate Porter, and then the Paradise Island Double IPA. So again, they're kind of addressing a bunch of different palate preferences there. And again, I think they kind of nail it on all fronts. Really nice flavors of every beer. The Kolsch is just a nice classic style. Their wheat has a nice orange flavor that comes through. You know, they mentioned a lot of citrus-based flavors that come in on that, and the orange is really prominent. It's a nice flavor. I think they kind of call it a nice summer beer, but I think that's a year-round availability. The 90K IPA is their flagship IPA. I think that's got a really nice malty balance to it. You know, the hop definitely comes through, but I really like the malt flavor that comes through it, so it's well balanced. You know, we've kind of talked about peanut butter porters here for, geez, probably every, not every episode, but for, you know, the duration of a year and a half. And I know for me, I kind of got a little wary of them just because they came on so sudden, and I had so many that I just kind of stayed away from them. And we were talking beforehand that neither of us have had one in a while, and that might be part of this, but I also think this is probably just a well-done peanut butter porter. I really enjoy this.
Yeah, this one surprised me because, again, I felt like I've been overdone on peanut butter porters, and this one ended up really surprising me. really not overly sweet. There's a sweetness there, but then it's balanced out, and I can't quite identify what's doing it. It's not quite a bitterness, but the sweetness is just masked out with a little bit of, I think, still something in that cocoa that's kind of giving just a little bit of bitterness. And so that peanut butter and chocolate work really well together in a nice flavor. I was really surprised by that one just because, again, we talked about it. Peanut butter porters, you know, can be very sweet, very big, and they did a really nice job of making a nice, easy-to-drink beer. And I'm really surprised by it, but I'd reach out for it again.
Yeah, the sweetness, the peanut butter really comes through. I think what maybe you're picking up on, what I'm getting at least, is that roastiness, that true porter flavor coming through. So maybe that's a little bit of what you're getting on there.
Yeah, it's almost a coffee, you know, like just a little bit to it. But yeah, it's a really tasty beer. In fact, I just waited to have my last sip of that just because I wanted to savor it while we were talking about it.
And then one of the last two was the 255 Amber Ale. I think that's a really nice amber ale. You know, comes out in copper in color. Really nice toasty caramel flavor. So really well done amber. Don't have too many ambers anymore just because there's so many different variations of beers out there that I tend to lean toward. But this was a nice refreshing amber that I kind of really liked. And then I kind of saved the last for best because it's where my palate is. I think it's where your palate is. The Paradise Island Double IPA is just really nice. It's not overpowering. You know, it is a big beer. It comes in at 9.5% ABV, but it's got a nice creamy texture, really nice mouthfeel. Not too overwhelming on the hop flavor, but it's definitely there and kind of settles in on your throat. It's just a nice drinking beer. And I think that description could be used for appropriately any of these six beers. I think they're all well suited for their styles with maybe just a little bit of the Laconia characteristics to it. Obviously, you kind of make each style your own, but I think these are well representations of these styles.
The Paradise Island Double IPA really kind of surprised me a little bit because of so much of the citrus, because I was expecting kind of their 90K IPA, but in a double IPA facet. And they definitely, is one of their descriptions of it, is a lot of orange, pineapple, and passion fruit. And you definitely pick it up. There's a little bit of citrusy to it. It's almost like a hazy IPA, not quite, but it's just got a lot of fun flavor to it. Definitely a very enjoyable beer.
And we should mention, not only are we giving them adulation today, they've actually received adulation from real beer judges.
Of course.
Not us, but real people who know what they're doing. And the Wacktown Wheat is a bronze winner in 2016 of the U.S. Open Beer Championship. And the Carver County Kolsch won the gold medal, I think is what I'm reading here, in 2016 for the U.S. Beer Championship. So that's pretty good. You know, again, as the Minnesota beer economy grows, it's hard to stand out. Especially depending on where you are in the state. Being within the cities or near the cities, it's probably easy to get lost in the shuffle, but this is definitely a brewery that should not be lost in the shuffle. And hopefully people are willing to drive out to Waconia. I know they are. They're wildly popular, so we're not trying to undersell their grasp on the local economy. But for us down in Northfield, way down yonder, I don't probably give them enough attention. So I think that's going to change after today.
Well, yeah, and you know, all the beers are really definitely interesting and fun. I mean, I enjoyed the Wacktown Wheat. I wasn't expecting it because I was expecting a, you know, standard kind of a wheat flavor, but they did a little bit, as they put it, with sweet orange peel and mandarin orange extract. So kind of, it was not only orangey, but it had just a little bit of a spice to it. But most people are probably familiar with the 90K IPA because it's been on tap a lot of places and also in a lot of your local liquor stores, because they do can that. And, you know, and they package the 90K IPA in, you know, pint cans. So lots of people have seen them out and about and stuff, but it's fun to be able to explore some of their other beers as well.
You can also get the Carver County Kolsch out in liquor stores as well. And I think they do occasional runs of other beers. I know a few years ago, the Paradise Island was available in Bombers. I'm not exactly sure what their distribution schedule is now, but you could probably find their beer if you really want to look for it. I know on their website they have places you can find their beer. So again, give them a look if you haven't. If you're already a fan, you got to undo it before maybe some of us others. So,
and well, those of you in our radio listening distance or those nearby, they got some of them over to the firehouse as well. So,
well, there you go. Perfect tie-in.
Of course.
Always the pitch man. Well, thanks to Waconia Brewing Company for sending us those six samples. I think they're a thumbs up from both of us for all of them. So I think there's six new potential beers from my fridge for, you know, when I get out and occasionally buy a beer. It's a nice segment for us to occasionally get to try these beers and see what's out there that we haven't experienced before. If you want to keep up to date on what we're doing and when we get to tap rooms, whether they're here in the Northfield area or elsewhere, I was just in Wisconsin and brought you back some beer and got to try some places in Eau Claire. Won't go into all that, but went to Eau Claire and up in Ashland and bought some beer and brought back from Wisconsin, because that's more of the, you know, that's like the Coors Light of the 80s, right? When someone, you know, this is an older reference for people of your age. No, I'm just joking. People older than you. My friends in their 50s and 60s, they used to have a friend go out and not Coors Light, Coors Banquet, excuse me. They go out to Colorado and they, hey, bring back some of that Coors Banquet. So I crossed the river and went into Wisconsin, picked up some beer I couldn't get here. So that's always fun. I didn't post anything. Maybe I should have, but we occasionally, and we'll post those photos and videos and highlights of things we're doing out in the beer community. So turn to our Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, search for On Tap Northfield. Go to our website, ontapnorfield.com. You can catch all our prior shows there. We have done 40. This is number 41. Kind of hard to believe that we've made this far. Well, we hope there's a 42.
Yeah, of course.
It should be there. It's planned. It's a big show. Stick around to the end of the show to figure out what show that is. Or just go to our Facebook page where we keep all those upcoming shows. But it is a big show. And I look forward to that one as well. But today we've got a fun show as well. And we're going to talk to Caleb from Lost Sanity Brewing. Stick around.
And now time for Beers of the Week, brought to us this week by Firehouse Liquor of Dundas. Our first offering is coming out of Bell's Brewery out of Comstock, Michigan. A lot of us are familiar with Bell's for, their Two Hearted, which is a very good beer. But this is their limited release Oracle Double India Pale Ale. So this is only released every year around July, and it's a Double India Pale Ale coming in at a nice hot 10%. And it's a really interesting beer. It's got a lot of flavor to it. As they put it on their website, aromatic punch, because they do several dry hop sessions with hop varieties from the Pacific Northwest. So they describe it as resinous citrus hop flavors mixed with aggressive bitterness from a massive kettle addition delivered on that aromatic promise. And it definitely packs a punch in this one. And it's both from a heat and a flavor standpoint. This is a big and fun beer.
And the key word I want to hit on is what you just said was hot. It has a nice heat that comes through, but it's not overwhelming. A lot of beers can be really overwhelmed with their heat. It doesn't need to burn my mouth either. So this is a nice balanced heat there at 10%. I know it's 10%, but I can still enjoy it. And what I get from this, I get from a lot of my favorite double IPAs. It has the oily texture to it, really coats the mouth, and it just kind of lasts and sits there. And I like that from a beer like this. So well done, the Bells. I mean, they do good beers. People know that. So this shouldn't come as a surprise. I have not had the Oracle before, but I did like it, so I would definitely have it again. And the other beer we have this week is another offering from Badger Hill Brewing, located in Shakopee. It's their Post Time Peach Ale. I had not heard of this beer. I'm officially off Facebook, so I don't keep up to date on these things anymore, but this is a new one for me. It looks like it's a collaboration with Canterbury Park, which is obviously in the Shakopee area, well-known horse racing track. Badger Hill did a collaboration beer last year with Valley Fair, which is just across the street from them, literally across the street. So it makes sense they're doing these collaboration beers. This one is a post-time peach ale, and boy, does that peach come through. I like it. And, you know, we've joked in the show that I'm a tropical fruit fan, and I will stand up and say I like the peach ale. Another nice offering from Badger Hill, which has developed a great standing in the beer community around Minnesota. So another fun beer from them. Again, one I hadn't heard of, so I appreciate Sean sending this one over.
Well, yeah, this one's very interesting in the sense that, like you talked about, it's collaboration. So I made the assumption, which I think is true, that this is a beer designed to be drank at the racetrack. So you're thinking, you know, sitting out in the sun on a, you know, 70, 80 degree, maybe 90 degrees, Saturday or Sunday while you're watching the races, and you want a easy sipper, and this definitely fits that bill. But we talk sometimes about, you know, fruit flavors being subtle. This is not subtle. The peach is up front and impersonal with it. But that's not a bad thing, you know, so it blends well with an ale, really easy drinker. I can definitely see picking this up if I was out at the racetrack. So I was really surprised by this one, but I definitely like it.
And that's a good point about this being hosted at the racetrack. Last year, the Valley Fair beer was available at Valley Fair, and I think in the tap room, only those two places. I don't think they had distribution. This year we're holding a 12-ounce can as we drink this in a glass, but we're looking at the can. So obviously this is out in distribution. I'm sure it's available at the park, though. And as you noted, 5.2% ABV, so this is a nice, easy drinker for those hot race days.
Yeah, no, these are both really fun beers. Both of them in, you know, this in a 12-ounce can, the Oracle in a 12-ounce bottle. Both really fun beers that you can check out. If you want to try either of these beers or any of the other beers we've talked about on previous shows, both can be conveniently found south on Highway 3 at Firehouse Liquor in Dundas.
Look for the fire truck. And now we're hanging out with Caleb from Los Annie Brewing out of Medelia, Minnesota. Caleb took the long drive up from that way down. I shouldn't say too long of a drive, but a little bit faster by car than horse, and we'll get to that in a minute. But Caleb, thanks for coming up.
Thanks for having me.
Really excited to have you on. You've been open for about four and a half months. For those listening, Medelia may not be a familiar town. If they know their history of Northfield, they probably have heard of Medelia a time or two. But why don't you tell us where Medelia is?
So Medelia is about a half an hour kind of southwest on Highway 60. We're southwest of Mankato, I should say. Just kind of that's the reference point where everybody kind of says.
Big regional hub, yep.
And so we're right on the four lane. We're kind of half an hour north of Fairmont. We're kind of half an hour south of Mankato, not directly south, and about 18 minutes south of New Ulm. So we're, a lot of the folks in the area kind of called us the tweener town because we're kind of in between everything.
Tweener town.
But we're right on the four lane. So it was one of the reasons I kind of like the spot. Plus, I was born and raised there. So that was kind of that chip on your shoulder. You always want to do things in your own hometown. So...
Yeah, so the Medelia reference, the Northfield, obviously the James Younger gang back in the 1876, all that stuff. So it's kind of cool that we have that connection, but now we have the beer connection. We've obviously got a growing brewing scene here in Northfield. You brought it to Medelia, so that's kind of cool. So well done on that. And obviously we always love having new brewers on, so it's cool to see that business entrepreneurship there.
Well, thanks.
And you mentioned Medelia. You're born and raised there.
Yep.
What was the reason other than that Medelia was the place for you to be? Obviously, Medelia doesn't have a brewery other than you. Was that a good reason for it? Or you just figured, hey, I know a few buddies who will drink my beer? Or?
It was one of the reasons. I was kind of looking in both Cato. I was looking in a bunch of other towns, kind of looking to open up a brewery for quite some time. But it was really never a big, big major thing. And then when the push started, the hardest part was finding a building. And when we started looking at Medelia, there was a couple of buildings that we were looking at. And happened to have the right fit in both the buildings we were looking at. Cato, I just, or Mankato, but Cato for short, I just couldn't find anything that would really fit what I wanted to do and kind of my vision. So,
which is interesting given the scope of Mankato. It's a big city, and I think of Medelia. So, we had a few buildings, and Medelia is how big?
Medelia's about 2,000. So
you had ample opportunities in Medelia, but Mankato was a little bit shy on businesses that would work for what you're looking for?
Well, either the space was, the exact space I wanted, but it was too small, or it was just enormous. And I'm like, well, how am I going to do just a tap room with some small distribution in this place? Because, this place could house a 30-barrel brew house and some, So there was that no in-between, kind of that kind of Goldilocks.
You need a tweener building for a tweener town?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So you end up in Medelia, so that's cool. But let's step back. Why open a brewery? Where did your interest in brewing start, and why pursue it?
It's interesting. I started out as a home brewer. I bought a little homebrew kit from a local shop called Don's Hobby. Hmm. And I was a Miller Lite guy at the time. I didn't even like, anything darker than... say Amberbach, Michelob Amberbach at the time.
I thought maybe you'd say you didn't like anything darker than like an old Miller Lite.
Right.
it sits for 12 hours.
Then it does. Yeah, it does darken up a little bit. But I thought it was cool to make beer and, got the buckets, got the kit. My first kit was just an amber ale. Turned out great. My second kit was a Bock, and it turned out god awful. Mm. And I think it was that second kit that really kind of sparked my interest, was that failure that said, man, how can I go from one kit that was awesome to the second kit that was just garbage? And so then you kind of get that, well, I'm going to figure this out attitude. And that was about 2002. So I've been brewing for about 15 years before I opened up this pro brewery. So, and what kind of got me into craft beer was a friend of mine went to college for Japanese, went off to teach conversational English in China, and I didn't see him for probably 2 or 3 years. He said, I'll bring the beer, you have the meat, and we barbecued, and he brought Guinness, and I was, like I said, kind of that light beer guy. Mm-hmm. And he kind of went through and he, poured the beer in a glass and kind of showed me about how to, why it has the certain kind of head it has or the foam. And I kind of thought, USOB, bringing me this dark stuff. And I thought it was thicker than thick. And about a week later, I'm playing Unreal Tournament on my computer, kind of going, darn, one of them Guinnesses would taste good right about now. And that's kind of, and I kind of thought, well, boy, if I like that one, what else might I like?
Well, if you like meat, the Guinness is good one, right? Steak in a can.
Right.
Is that what they call it?
Yeah. Yep.
So what? How'd your brewing then evolve? Did you start with extract kits? Sounds like probably. And then did you develop into buying bigger systems and doing more adventurous styles?
Yeah. So I did extract for quite some time. So from about 44 years, I did that. But they always had this like taste. You know, they always had this similar taste. So then I bought just a real, real cheap all grain system from Northern Brewer. It was just buckets and a plastic false bottom and plastic valves. And I did all grain beer out of that in about, it was about 2006, and did that for the longest time. And we kind of still had that taste. And so I started buying, you know, all this gear. Like I kept trying to upgrade and kind of like hone my process to figure out what was going on. And next thing you know, I'm brewing with a little self-made, what they call a RIMS, you know, it's a, it's a automated way to hold your temp. And a light kind of came on, I listened to another podcast and kind of went, wait a second, my water here is way too hard. And that's where I'm always getting this kind of twangy taste in the back sides of my tongue. So I really had to kind of hold my skills. I was trying to solve that issue, but I was solving all the wrong skills. But then while trying to solve that is where I kind of built that skill set of how to make beer. And then once I figured out what the water was, then things just started snapping together just like that almost overnight. So
your friends start showing up more often then, right?
A little bit.
You figured out the water issue, and that's an issue that plagues a lot of people. So, and it takes folks a long time because there's so many variables when it comes to science. It could be one thing. It could be number of beers you had while you're brewing, you know? So maybe something's off in your measurements. You just never know which variables the culprit at that time.
You know, and the stouts and porters always tasted pretty good. It was just, you know, when you get anything to like the amber or light, it just always had this like bitter astringent taste, and I couldn't figure out why, but
harder to mask that flavor, right?
Right. Well, and it was the, you know, our water was just way too hard, so my pH, my mash was just out of this world off. So, and that's what I figured out. Once I was sort of controlling the pH of my mash, my beer just snapped right into play.
So did you start like fabricating your own equipment and kind of building up from that? Or did you just add stuff to it by buying stuff and eventually just had too much stuff to be hobby brewing?
Well, I started teaching classes here a while on how to brew beer at the little local shop. And at that time, it was like, well, I want to come brew with you at your house. And I'll show you a picture of my phone here, my home brewery. But my home brewery got to be a fully automated kind of all electric deal, and it was in my garage, you know. In my garage, it started out where I had that, then I was just using a little heater. Next thing you know, I'm hanging a heater, we have plumbing, now we have a sink in the thing. And my brewery at my house became pretty much a miniaturized version of like a pro brewery in no time flat. I mean, I'm using pumps, I'm using heat exchangers, stainless steel conicals, heated and cooled, you know. So that's kind of, I was doing that, and it was one of those things where I was just geeking out on the process, not really paying too much attention to the, well, I was always paying attention to the beer, but I was paying more attention to the process than the beer, and I was always looking for the next toy. And so
at what point does that hobby become a business idea in your mind that you say, this is something I'm ready to pursue?
When folks kind of kept on saying, you make really good beer, really good beer, you know, you should open one of these up, you know, and you're the guy, and I'm like kind of going, ah, whatever, you know, you're drinking beer for free, you know.
It's always the old deal, right?
Come on. And, you know, you're just blowing smoke. And that happened for quite some time. And finally, at some point in time, I started sending beers off to a couple of comps. And I didn't do a whole lot of comps, but I sent one off to the Renfest. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sent one off to the Renfest as a Saison. And I took first. I'm kind of going, what the heck had just happened here? And started looking at my scores, and I sent some more off. And it seemed I was scoring well. I wasn't always winning first, but I was always scoring in the high 30s, if not, you know, sometimes hitting 40 every now and then. So
what's that scale for those who don't know?
Like so the scale is 0 to 50. So, okay. And then they typically say anything over 30 is pretty good. I haven't seen a score sheet in quite some time, but that's kind of what maybe said, well, maybe these folks aren't just, you know, telling me, you know, kind of blowing smoke to kind of get me to give them more free beer.
And I'm kind of curious because I don't think we've ever talked about this on the show. Like what are they looking for when they're doing those measurements? Is it clarity and flavor and color and things like that?
Well, it's smell, mouthfeel, taste, aroma. I'm trying to think if I get this right. Somebody's going to correct me here, but there's five. So we'll do, I think it goes by, you know, look, and I don't think that's clarity, but just the look of the beer, the smell, the taste, the mouthfeel, and the overall. So those are the five. And they're not, you know, a 1 through 10. Like the look of the beer, I think, is only like a 4 or 5 point process or scoring, and then like the overall is like 20 points. Okay. I might not have that right, but it's something to that effect.
But give a general idea to the listeners. That's kind of cool. I guess I never really thought about those competitions and how they're judged. I mean, it makes sense when you hear it.
Well, we've talked about having maybe the local homebrew group on. You know, that might be a good way to have that discussion as well, because we've, you know, the local homebrew group, the Milltown Mashers, has actually spawned off two of the three breweries here. Their breweries were a part of that before they opened their brewery. So definitely been at least a melting pot here for that.
So you kept entering these competitions, doing well. So this is what, I don't know, 5 years ago?
Thereabouts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that little seed of an idea in your head started growing as everyone said, hey, you should be doing this. And you got some validation from the competitions.
Yep. Yep. And then I started to think, well, if I could do it, I started, you know, running the numbers down, you know, and a lot of it was what, you know, lack of a better term, kind of a bar napkin kind of estimate going, sure. Boy, if I can pour about 100, you know, about 100 pints a day, every day I'm open, I can make this thing work. You know, but I got to be on a scale that's going to, you know, fit with my lifestyle, because I'm never going to be able to write myself a big enough paycheck to support my family. Mm-hmm. But at least I could do something fun and kind of have that part-time job that's really kind of, you know, killer. So
what point did you officially start pursuing it? Because obviously it's gotten easier in the last couple of years, but licensing, finding the right building, looking at ordering equipment, which also has been getting sped up. A couple of years ago, 2 years ago?
So officially started the kind of writing the business plan February of, you know, the year before last. So
2016.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And then we took possession of our building in August and basically started the renovations on that. It was a tight schedule, but I really wanted to open kind of in the spring. So we tried to hold it at as best we could, and we did make our goals. But the licensing was daunting. And every time you turned around, there's another form to fill out, another check to send off or whatever it was. But we just managed just to kind of keep on, you know, wading through the darkness to get there, and we got there. So
yeah, we hear a lot about the brotherhood and the sisterhood in the brewing industry. We were talking before the show, and you said there was a couple folks that you kind of leaned on a little bit to help you get through maybe not so much the process, but just questions you had about different parts. Who was especially helpful to you as you worked through that process?
So kind of the first kind of call I made was to, I think it was AJ over at Montgomery, and he just kind of chatted with me for about 5 minutes on the phone and kind of gave me a direction, and I kind of, you know, I called him or texted him a couple more times. But even though it was maybe only 15, 20 minutes of conversation total over, you know, how many, you know, texts and calls we had, just that little bit of help, you know, just was enough to point me in the right direction. The other thing that really worked out in my benefit was I work for the state. I work for the DOT. And just kind of knowing the process of how, when you work for the state, there's a mentality. And most of the time, the folks that are, you know, the licensing folks are there to help you. And so just ask the questions. And so when I got on the phone, it's like, I'm building a bar, you know, how do I need, you know, what do you need to see? And then they're like, well, we need the back wall to be, you know, and then they would kind of say, well, this tall? I'm like, yep, that's how high I need to be, right? And we just kind of got that little language going back and forth and just kept asking the questions, you know. You know, when in doubt, just make the phone call and ask those folks. They're there to help. So
along with that, I mean, one of the things we've heard, depending on different breweries, was Medalia already kind of set and ready for it, where they'd been kind of expecting a brewery, where they'd laid out some of the framework, or did you kind of have to work with the city as well to kind of get everything set up?
They really didn't have anything kind of as roadblocks in our way. And then, you know, we kind of talked to them ahead of time, and they kind of changed the rules ahead of time just to make sure that we were good to go. But from what I recollect, they really didn't have any books or laws or rules in the book saying that we couldn't open one up. And then they just kind of passed some ordinances or whatever it might be called, just to make sure that we're good to go. But they were extremely helpful too. I mean, everybody along the way was really helpful. If I called anybody in the beer world, they would be more than happy to answer questions and help you out. So
let's talk about the beer. You moved from Miller Lite to a thirst for Guinness to developing your own recipes and working with stuff with grain, all grain bills. What do you have in your tap room? What can people expect when they come visit you? Kind of where's your style land? And obviously you're only 4 months into this, so you probably have your kind of set beers you're working on, but you're kind of experimenting a little bit there, I'm sure, and then plan to in the future.
Right. So we have 9 taps now, which is super ambitious for a brewery that's only 4 months old, but we started out with 8, and we just added just another one just because. But we have cream ale, brown ale, a black lager, and then we have a 3 different IPAs on tap right now. We have a double IPA, a juicy IPA, and a kind of a standard West Coast IPA. Mm-hmm. And what kind of my biggest focus is kind of making sure the beers are drinkable. I mean, I think that's one of the things that I kind of found that
like was... Like to the average palate. You
mean? Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, technically, they're all drinkable, right?
Right, right. But it's one of those things, you know, when I was a homebrew brewer, I was in the business of making beer for myself. But now that I'm doing this as a business, I'm in the business of selling beer. And so, you know, it's not what I like. And I would say that the beers on tap, there's a couple that I really like, but... You know, if it was at my house, I think I'd have different beers on tap, but I'm trying to, you know, appeal to a, you know, kind of a broad palate and really kind of hoping to open up some people's kind of taste for some different beers besides just kind of the macro lagers that are out there.
So would the cream ale and the brown ale, those are kind of your standard beers that will always be on? Or is everything up for debate to come and go?
I think everything's up for debate, being as young as we are, but the cream ale is definitely turning into be our best-selling beer. I mean, just because folks will walk through the door and they'll say, give me your lightest beer, and that's what we just pour.
Standard protocol there, right?
Pretty much. And the brown ale is another one that's, you know, it's brewed with, we use locally sourced honey with it. We also use some oats in it, which really kind of help make it crisp and clean and a little bit smooth on the palate or silky on the palate for the oats. And we find that that's becoming our second, you know, biggest beer right off the bat. Now, the juicy IPA that we did, we call it the full pulp, just because it looks like a glass of full pulp orange juice, is gaining some speed really, really fast. But it's one of those things where you got to kind of take that with a grain of salt because it's the newest, greatest IPA out there, and it could be just a flash in the pan. You know, once the next one comes along, if it's a zero IPA or a brute or whatever it might be, maybe that'll be the next one. But so I don't want to, you know, put all my eggs in that basket just yet, so...
Well, it's interesting to hear. We hear that a lot. That's always, you know, lightest beer number one, whatever that is, whether it's a cream ale or something else, and then an IPA quickly follows. So it depends on who's walking through the door, right? So you have the breakdown of maybe the people who are in your area who are still on the large lager wagon, but then you have people who are always willing to go see the new brewery, and they're willing to drive a couple hours even if they're coming down from Minneapolis or something like that. And they're probably the ones that come in, hey, what's your hoppiest beer? Oh, you have the juicy. Let's do that. Are you seeing a good mix of people coming in? Do you have a lot of regulars who are from the area? And then do you see people coming down from, you know, all the way from Mankato or even from, you know, Rochester, the cities?
Yeah, we typically, since it's just a family-run thing, we always ask, you know, how's it going and where you're from? And then a couple nights, we just kind of just started jotting down, you know, are they from in town, are they from out of town? And we've did that a handful of times. We found that 85% of our business is from out of town, which is really, really cool kind of to see folks traveling to kind of come and get that beer that's not, you know, a Miller or Coors Light or whatever it may be. But yeah, we do have our regulars. And one of the hardest things to do is, you know, when you have, you know, the four or five folks that really, really love a beer, but it's, you know, and we're still so young, you're trying to rotate beers in and out and trying to see what's going to be kind of your flagship beers. And then when you can't pour them that beer anymore because you're going to move on to the next beer because I only have so many tabs. And they're like, oh, that was my favorite. It's like, oh, I'm sorry. And you feel so bad. You want to have every beer for everybody. But at some point in time, we just have to keep things mixing up. Kind of rolling through.
That's one point we like to remind people who listen to this show, that consumers often think about themselves, which why wouldn't they, right? They want the beers. But they have to remember that each brewery they go to is a business and you have to make money. And if that beer sat for 6 weeks and you have another beer that could sell in 2 weeks, you got to make the beer that's going to sell in 2 weeks because you need to make that money so you can make the next beer and just keep paying bills and all those things. So you want to balance, you know, having fun doing different beers, but also paying the bills. I mean, it's a business at the end of the day.
Yeah, at the end of the day it is, and you've got to keep the lights on. Yeah.
So, you know, maybe in a year you can reassess kind of, you know, those big beers and what did well and what can come back and maybe become your seasonals or stuff like that. But 4 months in, you're probably not yet thinking about that. You're just thinking about the next batch, right?
Really, that's exactly what we're thinking about is the next batch. And more or less, it's developing that schedule of brewing, you know. So the cream ale is probably going to be one of our staple beers. I mean, it's kind of, you know, the needle is trending in that direction. And we've already brewed 4 batches of that beer to date. And so it's, you know, how often do I need to use it? Is it once a month? Is it every 5 weeks? How often do I need to keep that beer in a tank versus the other ones? And then figuring out how to kind of rotate your tanks. You know, at the end of the day, a lot of folks think you're kind of this like grand wizard in the back, but you're just operating a factory. It's just a small, small factory is what you're operating.
So responding to demand and also building, creating beer that's going to sell, when you look to the fall and winter, I mean, do you want to do, I don't want to say more standard styles, but styles that are going to sell? So, you know, your nut brown ale, but you already have the brown ale, but like a, you know, a stout, a nice stout for the fall and the winter, something like that. Or will you play with a little bit and put something in there that maybe it gives a little more flavor or a different take on a beer. I mean, how do you develop your recipes looking in the future? Balancing those two ideas in mind, something that's approachable, drinkable, as you put it, but also maybe challenging yourself as a brewer.
So one of the things that's, you know, we're trying to do is, again, kind of search for what people want, but developing recipes is, you know, the first thing I do is if folks say I want an oatmeal stout or I want this, and we're starting to hear that more and more, then I'll just go and just start reading recipes, and I'll read, you know, a dozen, if not two dozen of them, to really kind of see like where that style's sitting as far as, you know, as am I seeing maris otter all the time, or am I seeing, you know, oats in this thing all the time, or whatever it might be, kind of what am I seeing trendy, and then kind of sitting down and looking at what I can get for ingredients and kind of where I want those, you know, those critical numbers, like what do I want the, you know, the alcohol to be, you know, what kind of hop notes do I want, then kind of just starting to jotting that down. But it's, you know, in the back, it's just me. So it's just me kind of at the beersmith, which is software I use to develop, and just kind of clicking away. And then that's kind of how it works. And, you know, as of now, I'm drawing a lot off my homebrew recipes to really kind of get that going. And to answer your question, how to challenge myself is, you know, I've never really, as a homebrewer, again, drinkability has always been one of my focuses. So I've never been one on like spicing beers. So that's going to be one of my big focuses, is trying to figure out, especially on a large scale, you know, how am I going to start doing chocolate beers and, you know, stuff with different spices in it, which I really find that I enjoy, but I rarely brew as a home brewer.
So are you going to is your home brew system almost your pilot system, where you can use that as your R&D and try things out before you even try to bring it into the large scale?
It certainly could be, but I just find that I don't have time to go home and homebrew anymore. So my home brewery, which is sat idle since April.
It's a blessing and a curse, right?
It kind of is, but, you know, it's like I said, well, you know, when you're a factory, there's a lot of other things to play into it too. So the nights that I'm, you know, not making beer, then it's your carbon beer, you're testing all the, you know, values, because it, you know, every beer has to turn out relatively the same from batch to batch, so you're really always watching it, you know. And if it's not that, then there's always something to clean, always something to organize. So it's just finding time to get back home and kind of do the stuff I used to do is that's kind of the challenge, is I really need to spend a lot of time at the brewery just making sure that the next batch turns out, and, you know, that I have enough grains and that I have this. There's a lot of logistics that go on behind the scenes that when I got into it, I just didn't expect.
And how big of a brew house are you working with?
Five barrel. So we have four tanks, and we're doing kind of what they call a unit tank. So we're doing everything in one vessel, so we're not transferring over to a bright tank, which really kind of helps with, you know, keeping the oxygen pickup down, but also, you know, kind of helps me with the process and making sure that if there's a beer in tank number one, I don't have to worry about having the bright tank empty. I can just kind of focus on it, you know, tank by tank basis. So
tell us a little bit about the space. What can people expect when they walk into Lost Sanity?
So they can expect a long, long hallway. We got it. Our building's from 1892. It's an old pharmacy, and it's only 25 foot wide, but it's 138 foot deep. So When you walk in, you know, you're going to see kind of our tap room and our seating, you know, area. But also, as you kind of like peer back, then you're going to see all the stainless steel stuff and all the equipment. And we had to kind of add some bathrooms. So kind of near the back is the bathrooms, but then right after that, then is all the brewing stuff. So, I mean, we really kind of want to make sure that, you know, as you walked in there, you could kind of be there and kind of see all the brewing gear. And, you know, typically I brew like on Sundays and Saturdays. So, you know, if you're there on a weekend, you'll kind of catch us brewing. You get to hear the sounds of the pumps and kind of the smells of the malt and all that stuff. So really, you know, the experience that I really like is really trying to incorporate that. So, but, you know, the tap room is, you know, we tried to incorporate as much of the old building that we could, but then again, there's balancing that budget and that build out. I mean, you know, we have natural tin underneath our kind of our false ceiling, but, and that's another 30 or 40 grand. That's just not in the cards. You know, the biggest thing is getting your doors open and making beer, and then worrying about the, you know, all that other stuff later. So,
and I don't know if we brought it up before, but you are located right in the heart of downtown, so you don't really have to go anywhere. You just find the main drag, go right down there. I definitely enjoyed going to the space. We wandered around a little bit out after that. It looks like you have a beautiful Mexican restaurant across the street, and that's really easy to find. And you know, unlike some where you're kind of out in an industrial zone and you got to like take a three rights and a left to get there, it's very easy to find. I love the space.
Yeah, I mean, and We're also working with the there's another pizza place that's just down the street too. So there's two restaurants in town, and one of the reasons we don't have food trucks all the time is we're trying to support our kind of our local restaurants too, and kind of work into that symbiotic relationship. So we couldn't have ended up in a better space. I mean, being right in the heart of downtown. So
when you're brewing, you've got other people working for you, right? Helping out. I think I've seen a couple articles. Your dad shows up once in a while.
So dad, he's the other owner. And so he's there all the time, just like myself. And then, my kids help, and my wife helps, and then some close friends. My wife really, didn't do anything with the brewing. When I homebrewed, she just accepted it and let it kind of happen. But now that we're kind of working together, she's the one who really takes care of all the tanks, and so we're kind of jokingly calling her Tank Girl. But she
is that a Lori Petty reference? It's a mid-90s.
It's an awful movie. It's one of my guilty pleasures, but
it is very awful.
Oh, it was a fun movie. I enjoyed it.
That makes sense.
Well, I was old enough that it actually came out as a teenager for me, so you know.
Yeah. Anyway, Tank Girl,
and then. God, we lost my train of thought here.
That happens here from time to time. I didn't think when we started the show a year and a half ago we'd ever have a Lori Petty reference.
Yeah.
And if we did, I thought it'd be a league of their own. But, you know, you take what you can get.
Well, if anyone's going to have a weird, obscure reference, it will be you, so.
You know me well by now.
Yep.
So your wife helps out. That's where we're at.
Yep.
She's accepted and kind of embraced the role of being
She's almost turned into an assistant brewer. Like, she still doesn't understand the brewing process, but she understands kind of the cleaning process. She did work as kind of a part-time job as a, you know, what they call a sani shift over at Crafts. So, I mean, working with all the clamps and the stainless steel and knowing how to clean all that stuff. And it's, you know, I thought, well, you know, you don't know how to brew, so much help can you be? And she just picked up right away and just started, you know, basically putting the tanks together. Just she took I put the initial tank together, you know, with all the clamps and where everything needs to go, took a picture, and she did. I don't think I put a tank together yet after the first one. So, and then,
well, that's the old bit about brewer, right? You're just a glorified cleaner,
pretty much.
What you spend most of your time doing,
pretty much,
because sanitation, you know, is a little bit important when you're making a product.
When I used to teach,
be consumed.
When I used to teach the homebrewing classes, I always, you know, I'd say, you know, I'm so and so, and here to teach you how to make beer. And I'd say, show of hands, who likes to do dishes? And it was one of those kind of jokes, but it's, yeah, I mean, brewing is cleaning.
It's a big part of it.
Yep. But the boys kind of help. So my one boy's eight. He's just turned 18, so he kind of helps pour the beer since he can. And then my 13-year-old, Timmy, he more or less just kind of busses to tables and helps out in the pack. And then I have an older son, Ricky, and he helps me brew as well. So, and then my brother Nathan is one I brewed with quite a bit back when I was a home brewer, and he helps as much as he can, but he's got three children under the age of four, so he is a busy, busy guy.
When he comes to the brewery, he just wants to be left alone.
I think he just wants to be, you know, be amongst adults.
Sure.
It kind of seems.
I can relate. I can hear that.
Yep.
So when can people come visit you? You guys are obviously open on the weekend.
Thursday through Sunday, and we're open, you know, at noon on, or not noon, sorry. We're open at 5 on both Thursday and Friday. And Saturday and Sunday, we open at noon, and we close at 6 o'clock on Sunday just because of, that's kind of when the off sale of the growler stops. Yep. So we kind of want to align our hours with that. So
if people want to find out what's going on with you guys, any new beers are coming out or any food trucks you might have, they can find you online, I'm guessing.
So we have you know, both our Facebook and our website, you know, lostsanitybrewing.com. And then our Facebook is just Lost Sanity Brewing. We have three new beers that we're kind of looking to come up. We have an Oktoberfest. I might've got that in the tank a couple weeks late, but we have an Oktoberfest coming up. I have a Belgian trip coming up, and then I also have a Belgian blonde coming down the line too. So
cool. Those are all good recipes I'm sure people should go check out.
Yeah.
Thursday through Sunday.
Yep.
Thanks for being here, Caleb. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, this is Andrew Burns with another Style of the Week for you. This week we are talking about Fest beer. As we get into Oktoberfest season, it can be fun to think about the beers that Germans actually drink during this annual celebration. Now, most American Oktoberfests are what a German would call a Märzen beer, which means it's brewed in March. and drunk in the fall. And that is a great story for Oktoberfest, but unfortunately, that's not the beer that Germans drink during Oktoberfest. Instead, they drink what they simply call fest beer, which is a much paler lager, much more like an export lager. It's a little bit stronger than like a Pilsner-type lager, so it does have that extra kick of alcohol, but it doesn't have the reddish, caramely color or flavor that you get from a Märzen. Instead, it's a very pale, straw, gold-colored, balanced lager with just a hint of hop character from those noble hops. It's definitely a beer that's meant to be refreshing and a beer that you can drink a lot of, which is perfect for the season.
It's been a few weeks since we've talked about developments in the area, so I thought we'd catch up on a couple news items here.
Of course.
And we now have Gravity Storm Brewery Cooperative in Austin open, the second brewery in the town. You've been to the other one. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that. But Gravity Storm, obviously a co-op, which is kind of a cool model. There's a few of those in the state, including like Fair State. And they're going to be open Monday, Tuesday, Friday, and Saturday. They are now open. And you can find out more about them at gravitystormbrewery.com. So that's two breweries for Austin. That's kind of cool.
Well, yeah, and especially they went from having no breweries to within about 2 to 3 months having two. So yeah, that's kind of an exciting development for them. Yeah, when I was at Angry Hog, they were talking a little bit about it. So the new one is downtown in a more of a centrally located location. So Angry Hog's more on the north side. So it's great. I mean, it's wonderful to take a spot. We've talked about in past shows where there's kind of was a hole in Minnesota, like, you know, a big vacant
south
hole.
Of Faribault.
Yeah, you know, hole where there really wasn't any brewery. So awesome filling those in. And we're going to be talking about another one here in a second. It's kind of fun to be able to see some breweries filling in some of those dark spots on the map.
Yeah, it's a good time to know we do have Angry Hog up on the show this fall. So you guys can look forward to that as well. You mentioned the hole. One of those spots is kind of a regional hub, just like Austin and Albert Lea. Owatonna has a brewery coming finally. That's one of those places where you look, it's like it should be there already. It doesn't make sense that it's not. And it's in the works right now. Mineral Springs Brewery in Owatonna, they've obtained their planning commission approval. They have their building, and their 5-barrel system is ordered, I hear, from one of the co-owners. So that's cool. Owatonna, just a shout here from Northfield, not too far. You know, a decent hour drive from the cities, but not too far.
Yeah, but it's straight down 35. You don't have to deviate.
Highway miles, right?
Yeah, you don't have to deviate and, you know, take a left here, right there, kind of like meander through. You just head straight south.
And like we've talked on the show, every town can support at least one. And if you've got more than 2,000 people, you could probably support two.
Well, yeah. And there's towns like Little Fountain, Minnesota, that can support, you know, the population is small in the town, and yet it's able to support its own little brewery, especially with a little cross traffic. So it doesn't take a whole lot to support a brewery. You just need to have the right people in place to do it.
Patrons. That's what you need. Yeah. So Owatonna is getting their own brewery finally. So that's cool to see. And that's only, you know, what, 35 minutes drive from where we're at. So I'm sure we'll visit there a time or two. Finally, where we were at on the last episode is Rochester. There's 4 breweries currently, 5, 6, and 7 in the works there. They're going to become a little brewing mecca. We've talked about on the show before, Little Thistle Brewing is finally opening and has opened, I should say. We recorded this before they open, but this will air after they open. Little Thistle opening at the end of August. The 10-barrel brewery is from Steve and Don Finney, the former being the original head brewer of Grand Rounds Brewing Company. And Little Thistle will be open Tuesday through Sunday. So it's, you know, we've been following them for a while. It's exciting to see them finally get open. It looks like a beautiful space. Steve obviously has done some really good beer at Grand Rounds. I've been following them on, you know, the Twitters and elsewhere. I'm excited to see what they're going to do there at Little Thistle. And I love the name. I love the branding. Plays to the Scottish heritage a little bit. And I think those are one of those breweries that a lot of people will buy into for both the beer and the character around it.
Well, the interesting thing about that one is I'm actually intrigued by it only for the fact that the amount of interviews we've done in Rochester, whether it be, you know, Foragers independently, or, you know, we've gone to Kegs and Barrel twice.
Grand Rounds.
We've talked to, you know, quite a few people there, right? Steve Finney has come up multiple times. So I now feel like he's like almost mythological. You know,
the godfather of Rochester Brewing.
So I'm kind of looking forward to finally meeting the guy after all this. You know, his name's come up so many times. You know, Adam Fredrickson had nothing but great things to say about him and everything else. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what he brings to the table and stuff. I've been following on Facebook. He's got a really, all the pictures look like it's an amazing space. So really looking forward to finally, you know, maybe getting a chance to try his beer finally. And also hopefully we sit down and talk to him.
Yeah. Steve and Don just seem like good salt of the earth people from what I can tell, you know, an arm's length away via the internet. So I'm really excited to meet them and see what they have in store for the Rochester community and beyond, of course, because I know we'll be down there at least, and I'm sure others will visit them as well. And you mentioned Adam Fredrickson. He followed up Steve at Grand Rounds. He was Steve's assistant brewer, became the head brewer at Grand Rounds Brewing Company. He is now building toward his own brewery, as we've discussed in the show previously, called Thesis Beer Project. And that will be opening, reportedly, in early 2019. We're into September now, so that's, you know, not really that far out. You're in the final, you know, 4 months of the year, so that's not too far out. So you've got that to look forward to. Adam, obviously a former guest on the show, friend of the show, had a great interview with him when he was with Grand Rounds as a head brewer. And then a seventh brewery for Rochester in the works. Prime Stein is in progress, and it's also set to open in 2019. Not a lot of information about them, just kind of a little bit of scuttlebutt, and a mention from the Rochester Post Bulletin. So not too much info on there, but to be fair, didn't really research that much, but I'm sure they're going to do well as well.
Well, and then we can't forget about the fact that, you know, I don't know where it's at, but Waseca is still in the mix for possibly a second brewery as well. So, yeah, there's a lot happening right along that whole stretch in 14 there. You know, Waseca, Owatonna, Rochester, you know, kind of definitely filling in nicely with some fun breweries. So hopefully we get a chance to try them all out.
It's a good time to be a beer drinker.
Of course.
Craft beer drinker.
Yes.
Even the boot. That is going to put a wrap on this show. Thanks to Caleb from Lost Sanity Brewing for taking drive from Medelia, Minnesota. Just a short 90-minute drive southwest of Northfield, a half hour outside of Mankato, and you can do the math from Minneapolis, St. Paul, but not too far for a good drink of beer, and you've got a couple other stops. Just basically wherever you're coming from, you're going to find a couple other breweries out that way. So it's not too far of a travel. Ira, you've done it.
Yeah. Oh, I went from Mankato over and stuff, but yeah, if you're going down, coming out of the cities and you're taking 169, there's quite a few options off of 169 on your way down there or the way back and stuff. So,
and if you come from the west or the east and then head up north to get to Medelia, there's plenty of places. So
yeah.
Yeah, go check them out.
Yeah, it's a great little, it's a tiny little space, but it definitely works. It's a fun little space downtown Medelia. So,
and we'll be back in 2 weeks. That's 11 a.m. Saturday, September 15th here on KYMN Radio, 1080 a.m., 95 The One. Or you can catch us online at ontapnorfield.com or on iTunes, Player FM, Stitcher, Google Play, all those things. And it's a big show. We're going to be up at Surly, get to try Darkness a little early, and they're doing a couple different variations this year. Each year they've done the barrel-aged version, which is always a great beer, but this year they're doing some variations on the base beer. So it'll be kind of fun to check those out and talk to those folks up there and let you know what's going to be going on with Surly Darkness Day.
Yeah, and I'm definitely looking forward to it just for the fact that they kind of, A, they've sent us a couple of recent samples that we talked about a little bit last show. And so I'm kind of curious to see their lineup in the tap room now. It's been probably about a year or so since I've been out there. So definitely going to be fun to stop back out there and kind of see what all they have.
You think we'll have time to try a couple beers outside of the darkness?
They
won't make time for it,
yeah,
right?
Or I'll make time, but
Well, and that's the thing.
I might have to make a little time afterwards to sit and drink some water and relax, but you know, it's definitely a beautiful space up there.
Well, that's exactly it. For those who haven't been there, great space, and they've got a huge tap lineup. Obviously, people know Surly from what they've seen in the liquor stores and on tap accounts throughout the area, but if you haven't been to Surly Brew Hall, it's a phenomenal place. Great food, and the beer is just, you know, second to none, and they've got more beer than you think you would have there. And what's fun is, and we talked about this in the last show when they sent us some samples, is a lot of those were birthed out of what they did in the tap room. So it's kind of fun to see what they've been working on and just kind of maybe what's tap room exclusive. And that's always what I like to do when I go to tap rooms, is to enjoy what I can't get out in the wild, as I like to put it.
Yeah, and it's one of those tap rooms that's at such a large scale that it's up there. You know, if any of you have gone out and toured the large breweries, you know, like, you know, Miller or Budweiser, their tap rooms are kind of on that scale of a big, beautiful space, lots of room upstairs, downstairs, private dining areas. Yeah. Their outside patio is just absolutely amazing. You know, about the only thing that they lack is Consistent parking. That's about it.
Because they're busy.
Yeah.
So you can't just pull up and walk in. You know, no. Well, unless you're Ira. You know, big deal.
But yeah, you might have to walk a little bit to get there. But yeah, that space is amazing. And I'm definitely looking forward to talking to them while there.
It's going to be a great show. And you can keep up with what we're doing on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just search for On Tap Northfield in all three of those places. You can see photos, occasional videos, updates. Sometimes we post questions when we're digging deep and looking inward and wondering what people are doing with their lives. We'll ask a question here and there. On the Facebook page, we always show who's coming up on our show. So if you want to see who's coming up in the fall, we've got that filled out, I think, through October right now. And we're working on details for late fall into the winter. Hopefully we can announce something soon. So we'll see you in 2 weeks. Cheers.
Cheers.